Today we'll be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 47, Text Number 6.
Anyeshvavartha krita maitri yavadartha vidambanam Pumbi strishu krita yadvad sumanashva vivashat padaye Anyeshvavartha krita maitri yavadartha vidambanam Pumbi strishu krtaya dvad sumanhasa vivasat padaye.
So somehow or other I've been asked to give today's Bhagavatam class, and it's a very exalted subject matter, and I'm not at all qualified to speak on this, so I need everybody's blessings to give the class. So we'll just read the word-to-word translation, then I'll read the translation for the text. Anyeshu, towards others. You can repeat after me. Artha,
Artha.
For some motivation.
For some motivation.
Krita,
Krita.
Manifested.
Manifested.
Maitri,
Maitri.
Friendship.
Friendship.
Yavat,
Yavat.
For as long.
For as long.
Artha,
Artha.
As one is fulfilling his motive.
As one is fulfilling his motives.
Vidambanam,
Vidambanam.
Pretense.
Pretense.
Pumbi,
Pumbi,
by men,
by men.
Strishu,
Strishu,
for women,
for women.
Krita,
Krita,
shown,
shown.
Yadvad,
Yadvad,
as much,
as much.
Suman hasu,
Suman
hasu, for flowers,
flowers.
Eva,
Eva,
as.
Satpadai,
by bees,
by bees.
Translation: the friendship shown toward others, those who are not family members, is motivated by personal interest, and thus it is a pretense that lasts only until one's purpose is fulfilled. Such friendship is just like the interest men take in women or bees in flowers. Purport by the followers of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains here that attractive women, like flowers, possess beauty, fragrance, tenderness, charm, and so on. And as bees drink only once of a flower's nectar and then leave it for another, fickle men abandon beautiful and devoted women to pursue other pleasures. This tendency is condemned here by the gopis, who gave their hearts completely to Sri Krishna. The gopis wanted only to exhibit their charms for Lord Krishna's pleasure. And in the pain of separation, they questioned the motives of his friendship with them. These are the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Both Lord Krishna and the gopis are completely liberated souls, engaged in spiritual loving affairs. By contrast, our so-called loving affairs, being perverted reflections of the perfect loving relationships in the spiritual world, are polluted with lust, greed, pride, and so on. Like all liberated souls, the gopis, and certainly Lord Krishna himself, are eternally free of these lower qualities, and their intense loving affairs are motivated exclusively by unalloyed devotion. Om Ajnanate Marandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmita Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminit Namane. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaudavani Pacharine Edu Sheshak Srinavati Pashta Deshitarine. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shri Vasadi Gaudavati Bhaktavinoda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare. So, so as we can see from this verse, that the gopis are chastising Krishna, and we can see that Uddhava from the previous verses had come from Mathura on the request of Krishna to bring a message for gopis and Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai. So also from the previous chapters we can understand that Krishna had left for Mathura because Kamsa had invited him for a wrestling match, and Akrura had gone to Vrindavan to request Krishna to come with him on his chariot, Krishna and Balaram. So in this way we can see that Krishna foiled Kamsa's plan. He killed killed the elephant Kulavaya Pira, and he killed Chanura and Mushtika, the wrestling men, and he also killed Kamsa, and he foiled his entire plan. Then after killing Kamsa, And then Krishna returned to Vasudeva and Devaki. And they decided to him to get the Gayatri Mantra from Garga Muni. So then he got the Gayatri Mantra, and then it is the custom to go to the ashram of the Acharya or Guru to perform some devotional service there. So then Krishna and Balaram went to the ashram of Sandipani Muni, their spiritual master, and in this way they set an example for the whole world that they have to get the knowledge from the right source. And they performed menial service in the ashram of Sandipani Muni. And also, they learned from Sandipani Muni the intricacies of Vedic wisdom, and the spiritual science. And Sandipani Muni also taught them the various arts and sciences which are required for human society. And Krishna and Balaram, they learned 64 different arts and sciences in 64 days and nights. So you can see how sharp they were. They absorbed everything so quickly. So Sandipani Muni noted this extraordinary capability of his disciples. So when the time comes to go, when the disciples leave the ashram, usually they give dakshin to the guru. So Krishna and Balaram asked Sandipani Muni if he wanted any dakshin. And he said that, "You can bring me back my dead son." And on that request, they went to the ocean, supposedly where he had drowned. And they asked Varuna, they prayed to Varuna, Krishna and Balaram. And they asked him, "Where is Sandipani Muni's son?" And he said he's been captured by a demon in the depths of the ocean. So Krishna and Balaram then went to the depths of the ocean, and they found out that the son was not there but was in the abode of Yamraj. So then they went to Yamraj and requested Yamraj to give them back their teacher's son. So Yamraj gave back their teacher's son, and then they brought him before their teacher. And he was very pleased by their behavior. So as a result, all this time Krishna and Balaram, they were in, after that they went to Mathura to stay with their parents, because Vasudeva and Devaki were their original parents. Krishna and Balaram, they don't have any parents, but when they appear in the material world, just for their pastimes, they accept their eternal associates as their parents in one of the five eternal relationships. So Vasudeva and Devaki, they were their real parents. And Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai were their foster parents. So because all these years they were not able to stay with them because of fear of Kamsa, they now stayed with them. And as a result of staying with them, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they were feeling great separation from Krishna and Balaram, because they were all the time, they were remembering the activities of Krishna and Balaram, and like how they used to play, how Krishna used to play his flute. All the gopis would remember this. And because of the exalted devotional service, they could actually perceive the pastimes. And in this way, Krishna was present with them. And this is called Leela Smaran, in which the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram were manifested for them. And also Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that of all the yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. So in this way we can see that the residents of Vrindavan and the gopis are the most exalted devotees, especially the gopis. And as Krishna says, they are most intimately united with me and they are the highest of all. So in this way we can see they were practicing bhakti yoga. And of all forms of yoga, bhakti yoga is the topmost yoga system. As we know, as Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, there is Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. So usually people start off with Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga is basically that you do your prescribed duties without attachment for the fruits or results. And basically when that advances in knowledge and renunciation, it's called Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga means yoga of knowledge. And when that advances in meditation on the Super Soul, And when the mind is fixed on the super soul, and that is called Ashtanga Yoga. That is done through the physical processes of meditation. And when Ashtanga Yoga again advances, and that is called Bhakti Yoga. As we know, the absolute truth is realized in three stages. Brahma eti, Paramatma eti, Bhagavan eti, Shabdete. That the absolute truth is realized in three stages: the impersonal Brahman, the Paramatma, and the absolute truth, the personal feature. So the jnanis, they realize the impersonal aspect of the absolute truth. The impersonal aspect is the bodily rays coming from Krishna. That's called the impersonal aspect, in which there's no form, but the yogis can perceive the light, which are only the bodily rays of Krishna. And just like there's the sun, and from the sun comes the sun rays. So the sun rays can be compared to the impersonal aspect. And higher than that is the Paramatma aspect, in which the yogis realize the super soul, which is present in all living entities, in all species of life. So that is called the Paramatma aspect. And the highest of all is the personal aspect of God or Krishna, which is that Krishna has a form, quality, pastimes, paraphernalia, and he has a personality like us. That's why Prabhupada says he's the supreme personality of Godhead, because he has a personality. And he is the supreme. All of us are also Ishvaras, but we are minute Ishvaras. We have a controlling tendency to control over things. And whereas Krishna is called Parameshwar, Parama Ishvar. That he is the supreme Ishvar. And there's nobody equal to or greater than him. So you can see that the gopis or the residents of Vrindavan, they had realized the topmost aspect of Krishna, that is his personal form, personal aspect. And generally this is a very exalted nature. And we should all try to be the servants or the servants of the gopis of Krishna or of Krishna. And then Krishna had a cousin named Uddhava who came to see Krishna. Now Uddhava was of the same age of Krishna, and his bodily features also resembled that of Krishna's. Like he had like the very similar lotus eye, and his body was also blackish, and he wore yellow garments. He was very similar to Krishna. So you can see from Uddhava's position that he had achieved Svarupya Mukti, that he was one of the eternal associates of the Lord, and he had got like the same form as that of the Lord. So then Krishna decided to send to reciprocate with his devotees in Vrindavan, because his devotees were 24 hours thinking of Krishna. And as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, ye yatha mam prapadyante tam sathaiva bhajami aham mama vartmanu vartante manushya partha sarvasha. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So as the gopis and residents of Vrindavan were always 24 hours thinking of Krishna, so Krishna was also 24 hours thinking of them. And in this way, he decided to reciprocate with them by sending Uddhava with a message of solace for them. So then Krishna told Uddhava to go to Vrindavan, and Uddhava accepted his order, and then he departed. And when he... And another reason why Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan, because he wanted to show Uddhava the exalted nature of devotional service in Vrindavan. And Uddhava got this great opportunity to see such highly elevated devotional service. And then Uddhava travelled to Vrindavan on his chariot, on his gold chariot. And when he reached Vrindavan, he went to the palace of Nanda Maharaj. And he spent the night there, and Nanda Maharaj, and he saw how Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai, they were always thinking of Krishna, and they were remembering his pastimes, Krishna's pastimes. And he told them how Krishna was doing, Krishna and Balram, they were doing in Mathura. And they inquired about how Kamsa got killed. and how were the citizens over there and all that. And Uddhava informed them of all the situation, and he also and then he spent the night over there. And next morning, as usual, the gopis would come to see Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda. And when they came outside the palace, they were surprised to see a golden chariot. And they did not know whose chariot was that. And when Uddhava, he completed his daily rituals, he came out of the palace. And the gopis saw him, and they were very surprised to see somebody very similar to Krishna. Because Uddhava was wearing yellow garments, he had all the, his bodily features are very similar to Krishna. And they could understand that Uddhava was a very dear associate of Krishna, because he had, his bodily features were very similar to that of Krishna. And so they were very simple village women, so they just surrounded Uddhava. And they took him to a secluded place, as is mentioned in the previous verses. And they understood that he had a message for them. And they all surrounded him and they started asking him questions. And then the gopis were accusing Krishna that he has only affection for his father and mother. That's what they say in this verse. That he has only affection for his father and mother, and that he has become a city man of Mathura. And they were questioning his motives of friendship with him. So, in this way, this can be understood, and as Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur mentioned in the purport, that these are the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. These are very exalted pastimes, and they can be appreciated by liberated souls like Shukdev Goswami, Rupa Goswami, and even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. To understand these exalted nature of the gopis, he came in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to understand the pastimes. Krishna came in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, to understand these pastimes, one has to be a liberated soul to properly understand them. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions in the purport that this is called the Adi Ras. Adi Ras is the topmost platform of spiritual loving exchange, and which is free from any tinges of material contamination. But when this Adi Ras becomes materially contaminated because of the souls which are envious of Krishna's enjoyment, then this Adi Ras becomes perverted and becomes twisted and turns into material lust or the material loving affairs. As we can see outside in the material world, everybody is engaged in material loving affairs between man and woman, and that causes so much misery. It's like happiness in the beginning and poison in the end. Whereas the spiritual loving affairs, though the gopis are feeling great separation from Krishna, though it seems it's very painful, but it results in bliss. And whereas the material loving affairs, they always result in misery, though they might be like happiness in the beginning and poison in the end. And these material loving affairs are different from the Adi Ras, as gold is to iron. So this is basically lust. In the material world, when the service mood, when as Adi Ras or the service mood is perverted, it turns into lust. And as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Shri Bhagavan uvacha, kama esha krodha esha rajaguna samudbhava mahashano mahapapmo vidhi enami vairanam. That, O son of Kunti, that the material mode of passion, what was the translation? Kama esha krodha esha rajaguna samudbhava. That the material mode of passion, when do you remember the translation? The material mode of passion, when it comes in contact with something like that, that
is lust, is anger.
Sorry?
Is lust, is anger?
Yeah, lust turns into wrath when it comes in contact with the material mode of passion. So we can see that the eternal love for Krishna is transformed into lust because of the association of the material mode of passion. So what happens is when souls which are envious of Krishna, because envious of Krishna's enjoyment, they have thrown it just like this, the story of Adam and Eve. So when souls who are envious of Krishna, they come into the material world, and when they come in contact with the material mode of passion, their eternal love for Krishna turns into lust. Just like, for example, milk when comes in contact with sour tamarind turns into yogurt. Similarly, the love of God when comes into contact with the mode of passion turns into lust. And as we can see, it's not possible to satisfy lust. Just like the whole modern civilization is endeavoring to satisfy their lust, which is a perverted reflection of Krishna, of the love of God. So, and they're making so many big plans of sense enjoyment to satisfy this lust. And when this lust is not satisfied, it turns into wrath or anger. And then wrath is transformed into illusion. And then this illusion carries on this material existence. So the jiva is entrapped in this illusion of thinking that he is the body. And this is all because our greatest enemy is lust. It's not that our greatest enemy is Iraq, or our greatest enemy is some enemy. Our greatest enemy is within ourselves, and it is called Mr. Lust. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, that our greatest enemy is lust. And because of lust, the jiva has to go through all the 8.4 million species of life, and has to experience different types of birth, death, old age and disease. And as Krishna says, this lust cannot be satisfied by any amount of sense enjoyment, just as a fire is never extinguished by a constant supply of fuel. So Krishna also tells where this lust is situated. Krishna gives the strategic positions that the lust is situated in the mind, the intelligence and the senses, that these are the sitting places of lust. So usually when you see a war taking place, they put all their troops in the strategic places. So Krishna is also telling us where this lust is situated in the body. These are the places. And as we know, the mind is the center of all the senses. And the mind is the center of all the senses. So the mind is just like a repository where the lust is situated. And the mind comes up with all different plans for sense enjoyment. And then the plans for sense enjoyment are carried out through the senses. So then, as we know, they are the senses. Higher than the senses is the mind, and higher than the mind is the intelligence. So when the intelligence is influenced by lusty desires, it makes plans for how to fulfill these various desires. And so as the intelligence is influenced by various lusty desires, it comes up with plans how to fulfill the various desires, and in this way the jiva is entangled in the cycle of birth and death. So then this is the problem. Krishna tells about the problem. Then he also gives a solution how to control the lust, because this lust is carrying us through various species of life, birth after birth. Then Krishna says, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of lust by regulating the senses. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada gave us these regulative principles of freedom. Like in ISKCON, we follow the four regulative principles, like no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, and no illicit sex. So these are like the principles of regulative freedom. Without regulating the senses, it is not possible to control Mr. Lust. So if you see, like, if you have to do anything, you have to keep control over your senses. You have to regulate your senses. Even if you have to be successful materially, you have to to some degree regulate your senses. So similarly in spiritual life, if you want to be successful in conquering lust, we have to regulate our senses. And how do you regulate your senses? By cultivating jnana. knowledge and self-realization. Now the two types of jnan. One is jnan and vijnan. Jnan means to know the difference between the body and the soul, whereas vijnan means to know the constitutional position, that we are part and parcel of Krishna, and our position is to be a servant of Krishna. And the part and parcel of Krishna means that a part has to satisfy the whole. And so Krishna is the supreme whole and we are the part, and the duty of the part is to be an eternal servant of the servant of Krishna. And that is what is basically Krishna consciousness or devotional service. So this Krishna consciousness movement is just trying to make us the servant of the servant of Krishna, so that in this way we can realize our eternal constitutional position and engage in the service of Krishna. So the best way to control Mr. Lust is to always engage the mind in the service of Krishna. And in devotional service there are 9 methods, which starts with Shravanam Kirtanam. Shravanam Kirtanam means hearing and chanting. So we should always hear of the topics of Vishnu, and we should glorify these topics. So generally in the material world people also do hearing and chanting. They are hearing many mundane sound vibrations, like a lot of people they tune into radio and they hear television, yeah, so that is visual also. So they are also basically hearing mundane things. And what is the result of such hearing, mundane hearing and chanting? The result is that it binds us in the cycle of birth and death. It makes us forgetful of our eternal relationship with Krishna. But when we hear from realized souls like Srila Prabhupada and his associates about the transcendental nature of the self and about Krishna, then that helps us to get free of the cycle of birth and death. It helps us to revive our dormant Krishna consciousness, which is present in everybody's heart. So in this way, hearing and chanting about Krishna is very important. And also, Krishna says, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus by spiritual strength, conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So this spiritual intelligence is known as Krishna consciousness. So generally, as we know, the intelligence is above the mind, and the mind is above the senses. So if we always engage our intelligence in spiritual subject matter, then our mind will always be engaged in such a way. And this is the only way we can have control over senses. Like we see outside of the Krishna consciousness society, there are many yoga societies, and people do all sorts of yoga, various gymnastics, but they have no control over their mind and senses. They are still addicted to meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication. Whereas when we engage the mind and senses in the service of Krishna, we can easily give up these things. So it is very important to cultivate spiritual intelligence, and in this way the soul can be engaged in the service of the Lord. So we'll just stop there and see if anybody has any comments or questions or any corrections.
About comment?
Yeah.
You've done very well. Very well. You've done well.
Mm-hmm. I've got one question. Anybody? What is the role of false ego?
What is the role of false ego?
Yeah.
Basically, false ego means to identify with the body. And false ego makes us think that identity is the body, and that we know the spirit soul within the body. So,
and who is the controller of false ego?
Who is the controller?
False ego.
But Krishna is the supreme controller.
Yeah, correct.
Of everything.
Yeah.
I guess the jiva is the controller of.
Maybe, yes.
Yeah, the jiva is controlling the free will. Yeah.
Free will and. What is controlling the free will? Very good, you are telling the very correct answer.
Free will is like part of the jiva.
Who is the demigod controlling the false ego? The red question.
That I can't recall.
Lord Shiva.
Lord Shiva, okay. But basically, the Jiva has free will. And like Krishna, Jiva has all the qualities of Krishna. So if you want to analyze God, you can analyze the qualities of the Jiva. So Krishna has supreme free will, whereas the Jiva has minute independence. So if we change our independence to serving Krishna, like when Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, then he asked Arjun, so what have you decided? Do you still want to fight or you want to go to the forest and all that? So like this we can see that Jiva has the free will.
Okay.
So when we change our free will to serving Krishna, fully surrendering unto Krishna, then we can give up the false ego.
If you were in the lecture last night, Jai Bhadra Swami was telling, he was giving a lot of emphasis on Lord Shiva, because he is the controller of false ego.
Okay.
And if we serve him, and Lord Shiva is the pure devotee of Krishna.
Yes.
So that way, if we serve him, and we serve Lord Shiva by giving us intelligence to serve Krishna.
Yes. Lord Shiva is the greatest devotee of Krishna. Vaishnavanam yathashambhuhim.
So whatever you said, Prabhu said already.
So we have to follow in the footsteps of the great Mahajans like Lord Shiva, Prahlad Maharaj. Anybody else has any questions or comments?
Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya.
Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.